Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 18th of December. This is our show as part of the Faith Radio Network, where we'll cover the news and the topics of the day. If you know, if you're listening, we'll cover them from a distinctly Christian perspective. We certainly love to talk about all these news items, but we're not going to do so with an overly conservative or overly liberal bent. We'll try to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus throughout the morning, the author and perfecter of our faith. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and back in studio this morning, grateful for all the people that helped make things work after suffering a back injury about a week and a half ago. And I have to say, I used to think people who had back injuries, I thought, oh, you just kind of suck it up and move on with your day. But I think differently now, and being a bit of a diva as well, it's going to take me a little longer than the average person to recover. But glad to be back in studio with Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, and seeing their smiling faces as they too are following Jesus. And you as listeners, we would love to hear from you throughout the morning as we bring guests like Tommy Binion into the show, Rosemary Stein, and others covering so many of the important topics. If you want to jump in at any time, you can call or text at 877-933-2484. And as we get started this morning, I just referenced my friend Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation. And Tommy has some news in his life. We haven't had a chance to chat for a little bit, but I want Tommy to break the news. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. It's been a Merry Christmas in the Binion household. My wife and I welcomed our second son on December the 3rd.
That is outstanding news, Tommy. Congratulations. So have you named the child yet?
Yep. His name is Brooks Conley.
That's outstanding. Now, this is boy number two, if I understand correctly, in your household.
Yep. We have all boys. It's me, my two sons, our boy dog, and my wife is the lone girl. So the listeners out there may want to say a prayer for her.
That's outstanding. Well, I know when we went from one child to two children, Tommy, it kind of went from that time where you'd get some breaks in the day with naps and kind of rest, recover a little bit. But once you go from one to two, it's a bit of a game changer, isn't it?
It is. It's wide open in my household, you know, for now. And of course, we were blessed to have a baby over Christmas time, so we'll have family in the house just about every night from the time he was born until January. So we've got lots of help, and everybody's rested and healthy. I really can't complain. We just feel lucky and blessed.
I love it. Do you get a chance to get a tree up for your child and our two children and ornaments and stuff, or is it mostly just, hey, we're going to enjoy the time together and not worry about all the decoration part of it?
Oh, no. We've got the decorations up. We've got the tree. We've got – my son has a nativity scene in his room that he absolutely loves. He understands that it's a nativity scene. Sometimes it doubles as a helicopter parking pad, a helipad in his room. But that's part of our Christmas decorations, and we have a lot of fun with it.
Well, Tommy, I think that's part of the Living Bible translation where the helicopters show up and help deliver Mary and Joseph to the nativity scene. So I think you're pretty dialed in historically at this point.
He's creative like that, and if he's learning and cares about it, that's important to us. So I love it. He's having fun with it. It's his favorite toy right now.
That's great. Well, congratulations from me, from all of us at Faith Radio Mornings. We love having you on Tuesday mornings like this. We'll take a short break and head into some of the news topics of the day, including the budget showdown that seems to be happening between the president and members of Congress, as well as funding for the border wall, and the fact that Obamacare was deemed unconstitutional, at least by a Texas judge. So lots to get into with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation next on Faith Radio Mornings.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill, Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital.
Welcome back
city.
To Faith Radio Mornings. That's the music of Tommy Binion, who works with the Heritage Foundation and the executive branches within the government in Washington, D.C., joins us regularly here on Tuesday mornings to talk about some of the specific dimensions of what's happening out of the White House. And Tommy, this last week was a pretty interesting week when we saw aired live between Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and President Trump some pretty interesting and combative conversations about funding over the border wall, and even the president willing to own the fact the budget might get shut down. What is some of the buzz coming out of Washington from your end?
It's so different than ever before. You know, we've seen this movie before. There's a budget showdown. Something is at issue, Obamacare, Planned Parenthood, something, and the government may shut down over it. But we've never seen the parties to that disagreement debate the issue face-to-face. We see them talking past each other, and last week we got to see them talking to each other. Now, it made them very uncomfortable, and it caused some sort of wacky outcomes. We've never seen anybody try to take credit for a shutdown. We have only ever seen, and this is a universal statement, there are no exceptions to this, we have only ever seen somebody blame somebody else for the shutdown, not sort of take credit for it and use it as a tool. And so as we sit back and we analyze this, that was so different. This situation is so different. Even though we have seen episodes like this before, we've got to keep in mind this could end very differently than all those other times.
Well, it was so interesting to watch, too, as the president brought out some statistics that he claimed were related to the effectiveness of any kind of building a wall. He referenced Israel and specifically Jerusalem and how when they built a wall separating themselves from the West Bank, that terrorism went down by 99.9%, according to the numbers that he had. And I'm just curious your thoughts on this, Tommy. It seems Americans don't talk much about supporting the wall, but when they see some of the statistics and polling out there, that there really is some support on a majority basis to have a wall built relative to its effectiveness.
Yeah, I think that the effectiveness of a wall is pretty evident. If you drive around our country, you can see that highly secure places are protected by a wall. You can see that any building that we want, all of our houses have walls. All of our secure locations have walls on the outer perimeter. The people who are securing a place, they need a physical structure to secure. This is not I don't want to be flippant here, but it's not really like nuanced public policy discrepancy. It's pretty basic common sense. And even if you sort of quibble with the effectiveness of a wall, you think perhaps we have enough technology to replace a basic wall and we can secure the border either way. What you know, and I think this is pretty universal, what you know is that we need a serious and overwhelming effort on our southern border to secure our country and actually have a border. I think that pretty much everybody sees that. And so the fact that there is a disagreement over whether or not that should be included in this spending bill is sort of backwards to me. I would think that we would be arguing over what the money goes to, not whether or not there's any money in the bill. So it's really interesting. I think the Democrats are backed into a position they don't really want to be in. They're wanting to deny the president a victory, and that makes sense. But I don't think they want to be in the position of opposing border security. But the sort of cursory observer is going to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, it certainly seems like at least on this issue, the president has some leverage. And certainly in the past, the Republicans have obstructed the agenda of maybe Democrats that were in the White House. But in this case, as the Democrats are obstructing the agenda relative to the wall, they don't really seem to have any kind of alternative solution. And to your point, it puts them in a tricky situation because they don't want to be perceived as soft on border security.
That's exactly right. And border security is important. And it is a basic function of the government. When we pay a tax bill as high as we pay, and when we love our country as much as we love, we expect the government to fulfill some of these basic functions. And I think it just, we watch TV and we see them arguing over why they can't accomplish a basic function. And it just drives us crazy as Americans, because this ought to be step one. You know, how do we make sure that we control who comes and goes from our country? We can worry about the other stuff later, but this seems to be the last thing we're worrying about. And then the other thing that's frustrating here is that it's Christmas time. You know, I'm a procrastinator, but not this bad. This funding could have been done last year. It could have been done this year. It could have been done by the September 30th deadline. It could have been done by the December 7th deadline. But no, they chose December 21st to really give themselves a cliff. If they go over it, now they're in Washington for Christmas, and the government is shut down partially shut down at Christmas. This is irresponsible procrastination on a level that seventh graders and eighth graders will never attain.
Don't think we'll ever confuse the federal government efficiency with that of private enterprise relative to getting things done. This is Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation talking about some different things happening out of the executive branch in Washington, D.C. And Tommy, you also referenced the fact that there was a willingness to own a potential budget shutdown over funding for the wall. And the president really suggested he would do just that. Is this a winning political issue for him? I've never seen anything along these lines.
If he wins, it's a winning issue. A shutdown is a staring contest. It's a game of chicken. One party is going to get what they want, and the other party is not going to get what they want. So in this case, if the government shuts down for some period of time, but then it opens up and the president has achieved more wall funding than he initially has, then it's a winning political issue for him. If the government shuts down for some period of time and he winds up not getting any wall funding, the government opens back up and he has less or the same amount of wall funding that he had before, I don't think that's a winner for him. And this dynamic, whether or not he has leverage in the appropriations process, is going to play out again and again over the next 2 years with the Democrats in the majority in the House. So this is going to set the tone, and there is going to be a winner, and there is going to be a loser, and we're all going to know who that is by the end.
Yeah, boy, this already has a lot of rippling implications for the 2020 election cycle. Again, that's Tommy Binion joining us this morning, and we're celebrating the birth of Tommy's second child, a boy born, you said, on the 3rd of December, Tommy?
On the 3rd, my mom's birthday.
I love it. We'll take a break, and when we come back, let's change the conversation to some news out of Texas, in which a judge has declared that at least parts of Obamacare is unconstitutional, and what the Republicans are going to have to do relative to that to make sure they don't lose on this side of that issue. So more to come with Tommy Binion on Faith Radio Mornings.
On this birthday of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 drummers coming, 11 drummers fighting, 10 for delivery.
I don't know, Tommy. This is one of my favorite ones right here with Miss Piggy coming on the 5 Golden Rings. We listen to the Muppets Christmas every year in our household with our kids decorating trees. Have you fired this one up yet now that you've got a fuller family?
Not the Muppets. No, we do all kinds of Christmas songs, but we haven't broached the Muppets yet. Maybe we'll dip our toe into that tonight.
Yeah, all-time classic for sure. Kids coming down the stairs on Christmas morning to that one. It's one of our favorites. We're chatting with Tommy Binion this morning of the Heritage Foundation. And, Tommy, some of the other news that's come out in the last week is something you and I both referenced before the break, and that was the fact that Obamacare, which has been gutted in a few different ways by the president and rolling back some regulations, really received a significant setback from a judge in Texas. What do we see going on with Obamacare and even the future relative to it?
Yeah, so to understand this, you have to go back to the original Supreme Court case where, and if you think back, Obamacare was really in jeopardy. Many analysts thought that the Supreme Court, it had a conservative bent then, 5-4, would overturn Obamacare, would declare that the law was unconstitutional, and they almost did. But at the last minute, Chief Justice John Roberts decided he could uphold Obamacare's constitutionality under the tax power. He said Congress doesn't necessarily have the power to force you to buy something, but it has the power to tax you. And so Obamacare was held up under the tax power. Flash forward to 2017, Republicans passed that massive tax cut, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that we have all been benefiting from now. And part of that law was they eliminated or they zeroed out the penalty, the tax in Obamacare. The tax was if you don't purchase insurance, you'll have to pay this fee. Now, that tax stays on the books, but they made it $0. That's the penalty. So effectively, the tax goes away. So what this judge, Reed O'Connor, found in Texas is that if there is no tax in Obamacare, then the Supreme Court's ruling in the earlier case no longer holds water. It cannot be upheld under the tax power because now the tax has been repealed by Congress. And the reasoning is it's non-severable. It's like a house built with popsicle sticks. If you pull one popsicle stick, the whole thing falls over. So this is just a district court ruling. The case will now go on to the Fifth Circuit. But certainly this is sending reverberations through Congress, and every pocket of Congress has a different idea about what to do now. And so we'll have to wait and see what happens in 2019. But this is a real development in the storied history of Obamacare.
Yeah, it really is, Tommy. And is it a case for the Republicans a little bit about be careful what you wish for? Because certainly health care was the primary issue that was driving some of the conversation in the 2018 midterms. And if the Republicans repeal all this or if it gets labeled unconstitutional, they better have a replacement in play because people are starting to get used to the idea of Obamacare and especially like the coverage for pre-existing conditions. So this could be a big loser for the Republicans if they can't replace it pretty quickly.
Absolutely. And I think the Republicans' criticism of Obamacare is right on. And even I think the majority of people would agree with the Republicans' criticism of Obamacare. But where they started to lose people was they didn't have a solution of their own. And when you look at the left side of the aisle, that was all they were talking about. And they were talking about specific solutions. And they all pretty much basically agreed on what those solutions were. Now, I have a litany of criticisms. Let's not go through them this morning, but I have a litany of criticisms of those solutions that the Democrats are offering. They're basically offering socialized medicine, and we could see how that works in Europe. But the Republicans didn't have a plan of their own. If this court case, and it very well could, throws Obamacare into an uncertain future, and Republicans don't have a solution that they agree on, that they can enact, they're in big trouble.
Well, and when we see this moving forward in terms of the work back and forth between them, again, we're going to have probably a more interesting year in 2019 than even 2018. I can't imagine things are going to get better between the Republicans and Democrats here in the next year and a half before the next election.
Yeah, you know, they are going to have a strained relationship, and part of the driver of that is going to be the oversight power in the House. For the first 2 years of Trump presidency, Republicans controlled the House, and therefore the House did not strenuously exercise its oversight power. But with an opposition party controlling those subpoenas, those investigations, those hearings, the Trump administration is going to come under a lot more scrutiny than it had under the Republican majority. And that's going to be a source of, I think, a lot of conflict. You know, you hear a lot of analysts talk about impeachment. I don't really think that that's in the cards, but I do think that this oversight power and the way that the House is going to scrutinize the administration is really going to drive the news cycle, and it's really going to put a divide between the parties. It's going to make it hard to get really anything done. These spending deadlines, the debt ceiling is coming up next summer. There are some things that have to get done, and it's going to be hard as the parties get further and further apart.
Well, Tommy, there is one issue on which it seems like the Senate agreed here recently across both party aisles, and that was to hold the Saudi crown prince responsible for the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And on top of that, there is a vote 56-41 to end support for the Saudi Arabian-led war in Yemen. So this is one of these places that doesn't get talked about as much, but may have as much significant impact on world events as anything we're talking about this morning.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and it highlights that that the president is in a really different place than the Senate on the issue of Saudi Arabia. Now, one of those actions I think makes sense, right? Holding the crown prince responsible, saying what really happened. This is important for our country. The other, it may be an overreaction, and it may have unintended consequences. You know, on the other side of the conflict in Yemen are the Iran-backed Houthis, and what Iran intends to do is to turn that group of people into the Hezbollah of Yemen, and that ought to be really concerning to us. So as we look at that conflict, Saudi Arabia is not the only issue there, and that's one thing that I think the Senate ought to consider, is that there is a lot at stake in Yemen, not just our relationship with Saudi Arabia, which I think the president has rightly identified as important, but I think the Senate's right to say, you know, we're gonna say publicly who's really responsible for this, and I think that's a healthy thing to do and an important thing to do as well.
Well, Tommy, it's so great to get your insight and sort of ground level look at the events out of Washington, D.C. If they do continue to have sessions of Congress and the president having to address some of these issues over between Christmas and New Year's, do you have to stay on duty or do you get to unplug from this whole thing?
Well, you know, I'll be here in Washington, so I'll be following it. Normally, I would travel. I would go see family. But with an infant, we're blessed to be able to stay home this year, and that's going to be a nice respite for my family. So, you know, there are a lot of staff in Washington that won't be able to go home to see their families. They'll be here over Christmas, and that's going to affect this shutdown. It may even prevent it. The fact that so many in Washington would rather not be here for Christmas, they'd rather be home with their families. It's a very human aspect of the shutdown. It may not end on a policy basis. It may end on a very human agreement. Let's all go home for Christmas.
Well, we're suckers around here for pictures of newborn babies, Tommy. So if you send any our direction, Paul and I and Rachel will maybe just put some things up on our wall here, and we'll pray for you guys over the break and hope you have a great Christmas and New Year's, and look forward to catching up after that.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
We'll take a break here on Faith Radio Mornings for some lighten up and bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein. And Rosemary and I are going to talk about the significant increase in teen vaping and what we see related to that and health effects on them. So more to come here in hour one for the 18th of December on Faith Radio Mornings. Well, after chatting with Tommy Binion about some news out of Washington, D.C., I see that there's more headlines from that neck of the woods, and that's related to the investigation into President Trump and the potential for collusion in Russia. And the retired general, Michael Flynn, who briefly was Trump's first national security advisor, will be sentenced today for lying to the FBI about contacts with Russia's U.N. ambassador during the presidential transition. I also see that the prosecutor in charge of President Trump's defense, actually, Rudy Giuliani, came out and said that it was okay that the president lied before about his involvement with Russia because he wasn't under oath. So it seems like things are circling in, and it should be a very interesting next 6 months out of Washington, D.C. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was reviewing some of the top 10 theological stories of 2018 with Colin Hansen of the Gospel Coalition, and he was reminding us of the story of the megachurch pastor Andy Stanley talking about unhitching the Old Testament from the New Testament.
Andy Stanley has made some comments about how we need to unhitch from the Old Testament. And I think there's a couple different ways you can understand that, and I mentioned that in my article at the Gospel Coalition. If, in part, you can understand him to mean what you actually said in the introduction. If you're having an evangelistic or an apologetic conversation with somebody, it's best to start with the resurrection. You don't want to start with more or less like the canonical attestation and development of the Old Testament, how the Old Testament came together, okay? That's going to be confusing for you to understand, and it's going to be very confusing for that other person to understand. And if you were able to prove that to them, mind you, somebody who does not have the Holy Spirit working at that point in their lives, then where are you? Because you're nowhere closer to them becoming a Christian, or maybe you're a step closer, but ultimately they haven't professed the resurrection of faith in the resurrection of Jesus as atoning sacrifice.
Colin and I went through several stories together yesterday that were some of the top theological stories of 2018, and I'd recommend catching that entire segment at myfaithradio.com. Well, I see that Dr. Rosemary Stein is on the line already, and when we come back from break, we'll start talking about some topics related to families and our children, especially around this Christmas time. And Rosemary and I will talk a little bit about some new research that's come out about the biological impact of screen time on our brains.
Sure, the world's a mess, but cleanup must begin at home. This is Jim Garlow. Here in the U.S., we're in a downward moral spiral. So what can we do about it? Well, we can certainly pray, first of all. We can work to elect godly representatives and leaders. And we can even head into the mission field. But the Bible provides important insight. In Judges chapter 6, Gideon asked God for help defeating the Midianites. But the Lord instructed him to first get his own house in order. Gideon was to tear down his father's altar to Baal and his Asherah pole. It was really spiritual house cleaning. We too might have idols in our lives. Obsession with money, status, pleasure. We too need to tear those idols down, cleaning up our own mess in preparation for the bigger task ahead. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Well, Dr. Stein, your walk-up music sure is timely right now, given the fact that tomorrow in theaters we're going to see the return of Mary Poppins in the movie Mary Poppins Returns. So well done setting that one up.
Well, I didn't have much to do with setting it up, but I get happy every time I hear the Mary Poppins tune. It's just so lively.
Yeah, there is something about it where it just sort of pulls us back into our childhood and just the wonder of that movie. Truly, there is so much to it and so fun to watch. Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, and by all accounts, Emily Blunt is going to do a very good job as Mary Poppins in The Return, from what I understand, coming up here.
Well, I hope so, too. I don't think that anybody can replace Mary Poppins played by Julie Andrews, though, but that's just my personal take on it.
Absolutely. We're talking with Dr. Rosemary Stein here, who joins us regularly on Faith Radio Mornings, that talk about how to help our kids and families, specifically from a biological and sociological, spiritual dimension, just holistic care of our kids. And I know, Dr. Stein, one of the things you and I talk about regularly is some of the new and increasing research on the impact of screen time on us biologically, specifically on our brains. And boy, some troubling research came out here recently, something about the thinning of the cortex relative to screen time. Now, I don't understand all this biological stuff, Dr. Stein, but that doesn't sound good.
Well, and you can see the differences. I've been practicing medicine for over 20-some years, and you can see the differences in the children just by looking at how their vision is affected. And let's not go too deep. Let's not even go into the brain. But kids today have a lot more vision deficit than they used to when I had just started practicing medicine. If that's just the eye, and I'm seeing a whole bunch more kids have to wear glasses and have problems where they need some significant work with time once they're into their young teenage years, that's just the eye because they're constantly on these devices. How are we molding their brains? And for the most part, you know, there are some good things about digital devices, but for the most part, I don't think that we're going to be molding children's brains in a good way. We're not really thinking about how is this going to affect kids' brains for 20, 25 years from now.
Well, and in terms of kids' brains, too, my understanding is they're far more malleable than an adult brain. But I'd be curious, Dr. Stein, you referenced vision problems, even for us as adults. I found a pretty significant decrease in my vision, and especially if I'm on a screen for a very long time, it's hard for me to focus on words on a page in a book, for example. Does this impact all of us, but especially kids, because of the malleability of the brain?
Exactly. But so children... It just are affected by everything. You talk about drugs. You talk about, digital devices. You talk about just the environment that a child is in and what they see visually. And so that is impacting and forming a brain because they're like information magnets. And so everything that affects us just a little bit will affect them, I would say, something like 100-fold, maybe even more. And so that's why we really need to be looking at this information and not just taking it and saying, well, but what can you do? Okay, let's actually take the steps to see what we can do, in, you know, individually in our homes or in our schools. How can we speak up and say, you know, it's not right for the kids to be learning on digital devices. They're going to be on them enough at, you know, just in recreational things.
And that is one of the things that schools have provided recently are iPads for students. This comes out of the federal budget. And are you suggesting, Dr. Steiner, what would you suggest to parents of maybe kids that are 3, 4, 5, 6 years old and maybe they're not even in school yet? Should we put these devices really in front of them at all? I mean, to your point, you stay balanced with this. They're useful, but it sure seems like the impact can be pretty severe at those ages.
If you look at a child under 3 and you give them a phone and you put a YouTube video, they are immediately glued to the phone. It's like the world does not exist. And you turn it off suddenly and they go into a sudden, it's immediate temper tantrum. That's what we're actually doing to their brains. It's almost like a drug to them because it's so different in the way that they connect with that phone and with the digital world than how an adult does it. I think it's very detrimental, and I think that the least that we expose a child to it, that it's better. I tell my parents, carry around a backpack, put toys in there, books in there, so that when you need to go out, you don't feel the need because your child is acting out to hand them the phone. The phone is really easy to do that, and you're not being bad. It's just that, you know, this is life. But if you think ahead and you do something because you know that that moment is going to come, then you won't have that temptation to just hand the child the phone because you're not going to be able to take that phone away from that child very easily because they're going to have a tantrum. And if you're out in public, you're going to do everything possible so that child does not misbehave.
Well, and certainly Dr. Stein and Rachel Sutton's making a good point in studio right now, actually, relative to the fact that children watch what their parents do. I think we underestimate how much they notice from their parents, how much parents model what behavior can be in this world. And if parents are glued to their phones all the time, it's going to be a pretty natural byproduct that children are going to want the phone as well.
Yeah, that is true. I don't know how many times I look out into my waiting area and I see a whole family of 4, and each one is sitting together but by themselves outside.
And in terms of all of that, then, one more question related to it is obviously it's Christmas time and there's going to be a lot of gifts given. And I know of a situation in which a young boy got his first iPhone, and it's almost like this rite of passage that we have in our culture now is, when did you get your first smartphone? And you sort of become a man or a woman when you get that smartphone. It's kind of crazy when you see it playing it out that way. But do you suggest maybe staying with more of a flip phone kind of thing or a different kind of communication advice versus putting smartphones into the hands of really young kids?
Oh, the kids are going to hate me for saying this, but I think just delay. You know, set an age and stick by it. And I would say probably if you can wait until at least the teen years, it's better. And if you can wait until the mid-teen years, that is really, really good. I remember we didn't give Hannah a smartphone until she was, I think it was 15, maybe 16. She was probably the last one in her classroom, and she was made fun of, and she kept on saying, Mom, you can't do this to me. I said, I certainly can. I want to protect that brain as much as possible. You know, and now she's on the phone, you know, quite a bit because she's 19, and her world revolves around communicating around this thing. I think that's exposure enough. If she would have been exposed to it, you know, from the time that she was 12 until she was 15 or 16, then her brain would be – teenagers don't need a reason to have more of a brain melt.
Dr. Rosemary Stein this morning, and we'll take a break here, Rosemary. When we come back, change the topic a little bit into some of the research that's been done where it seems the usage of e-cigarettes has more than doubled among our high school students. And also I'd love to get into some stories coming out of your clinic in which you've experienced some tragedy and sudden deaths in some families and how we can help come around people that are experiencing really difficult moments during this holiday season. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and we're talking with Dr. Rosemary Stein about different issues that impact us as families and as grandparents and with our children. And Dr. Stein, I know growing up when I was in high school, there was a designated smoking area for students still at that time in the 1980s. It was called the pit at the high school in which I was, and students could go out in between classes and smoke their cigarettes. And then we saw a pretty significant decline, and schools obviously went smoke-free. But now we've seen the rise of this new phenomenon that you and I have chatted about a bit, vaping, e-cigarettes, and it sounds like it's really on the exponential increase.
Yes, it is. And I think we switched one thing that was not good, where it was actually pretty bad for kids to be smoking cigarettes because of the effects mainly on their lungs. But now we've taken away the effect perhaps on the lungs, and we've transferred it to really bad effects on the brain, and it's very concerning to me because the vaping process makes it go into the system of a kid much quicker, and so you get that sort of response from the body very quickly, and it leaves very quickly as well, so that they feel the need to take more of this vaping product. And you don't really know what's in the product on top of everything else. I mean, maybe you're doing nicotine, but you may be doing other sort of mind-altering products, and that will affect the kid's brain. And so you're going to make them pretty addictive. Childhood is already a time that you can easily get caught on to certain things. We were talking about digital devices and how kids really get connected to the digital devices. Well, when you give them a substance that they can get connected to, that's even worse for the kid's brain.
Well, and Dr. Stein, too, as I'm walking through maybe the city and people are on their e-cigarettes, they blow smoke around like we used to with cigarettes all the time, and there's all this concern about secondhand smoke. Has there been any research or anything you've seen so far relative to secondhand smoke in the e-cigarettes?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I haven't thought about that one. I think that because there are so many different substances that are being inhaled, that you're not going to necessarily get a whole bunch of exposure to one thing, except if it's nicotine. But why should my child have to inhale somebody else's product that may be detrimental, even in small amounts? So I'm not sure that the cumulative is going to affect the kids so much, unless they're in the same environment, like an adult is vaping around the child, and that's probably going to affect that kid. So that's a really good question that I don't know that we have a lot of answers to right now.
Well, certainly we have a pretty long history of introducing certain substances into our environment and into our lives, and then we kind of feel the impacts of that quite a bit later. And this could be one of those dimensions. We're talking with Dr. Rosemary Stein this morning on Faith Radio Mornings. And Dr. Stein, I know you sent a note to us here about some tragedy, some difficulty that you've seen in your clinic, and the sudden loss of some parents. So kind of talk us through what you've seen firsthand in this holiday season, and even some ideas for as people are walking through tragedy, which undoubtedly many of our listeners will be walking through some of the sadness, kind of what you're seeing and how to think about this during the holiday season.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So in the last 6 months or so, the clinic has lost three young parents, two to cancer and one to a sudden heart attack. And I'm talking about, you know, in their 30s. One of the families was a homeschool Christian family, and the dad is a youth minister. And she left behind a family of five, and two were adopted. So we're gathering around this family, and I've prayed for him already with his children, and you can see that on my Facebook page. But the thing about it is that during the holidays, we really feel the loss of that person because there's an empty seat around the table. So if these families, if this dad or mom that's left behind is going to have a difficult time, it's going to be around the holidays. It's going to be around Christmas Day. Please reach out to them. Be praying for them. Let them know that you're there. Let them know that there's a reason to carry on. There's a reason that Jesus left that person behind. Life will continue. Life, the little pieces of your soul will come back to you. and they need to understand that you're there for them for real, not just, oh, I'll pray for you, brother, but that you really reach out to them, make them a casserole, make them something, call them up, tell them, hey, you want to spend some time with us, bring the kids, be inconvenienced. And so that's what we're trying to do with the clinic. We're trying to be inconvenienced. And it's a bad way to put it, but we're looking for conveniences in our lives so much. And we should be looking for those moments where we're sort of out of our comfort zone and helping somebody else and just smiling and feeling with them and saying, you know, five kids around the table that we really weren't expecting or you know, we're stopping the clinic and we may see a couple of kids less or have to work an hour more. But that's okay. That's what the season is about. It's about Jesus being inconvenienced for us so that, you know, we could have life.
Yeah, and certainly, Dr. Stein, this is a season in which, of course, we celebrate the birth of Jesus and the forgiveness of sins and things being set right. But there is that dimension that he was birthed as a king of the eternal kingdom. And if there wasn't the eternal kingdom, this tragedy and the suffering would be brutal, but it would be of the kind in which there would be no hope. And so if we can reach out to other people, as you suggested, and bring a bit of that hope relative to the future, that is one of those moments that we can really celebrate at Christmas.
That's true. And then at the end of that, even though you've changed your plans and why are you bringing this person here and we really don't like them and they're kind of weird and awkward, but you know, at the end, you get so much more than what you've put in. And that time will, you know, once time is gone, it's never there again.
Mm.
So take the time to spend the time with people who are hurting at Christmas time, because they're no matter what, even if you do those things, you're going to be hurting. But the hurt isn't going to be quite as heartfelt when there are people that love them and feel for them around them.
Yeah, well, thanks for the just impact of that, Dr. Stein. Thanks so much for your contributions all year to Faith Radio Mornings, and we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and look forward to catching up after the New Year.
Thank you so much. Merry Christmas, too, Peter.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up next on Hour 2 on Faith Radio Mornings. Sure love Dr. Stein's suggestion that we rally around people that have experienced loss during this Christmas season. And if you've experienced loss, just know again that we're part of a kingdom that knows no end. The loss is painful, but it is not the end of the story. Looking forward to Hour 2. We'll start Faith Radio Mornings with Nicole Phillips and stories of kindness for this Christmas season.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.